I'm Jason Klom, and this is Comedy on Vinyl. Examine Doctors, the artist Mike Nichols and Elaine May. My guest this week is Lily Sullivan. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Instead of me possibly forgetting what you're here to promote, why don't you tell people first and then we can cover it again.
Wonderful. I guess I'm here to promote my podcast on Stitcher Premium, which is called Going Deep. And I play a therapist, Dr. Diana Deep, and she is unhinged. And I have a lot of great guests on, so it's been really fun. It's basically therapy sessions.
Mm-hmm. Now, was this album then picked entirely on purpose, or was it just one that you listened to a lot as a kid or as a young adult, or I don't know?
Yeah, I mean, I think this album basically, when I first started to really get into comedy, I studied improv and I studied theater growing up, but by the time I was in my early 20s and I had just left college was when I discovered The Second City and kind of fell into its history. And that's when I first listened to this album. And then I rediscovered it again. Only like a couple years ago, we found this album. Me and my fiance found it at like a thrift store or something. And then I re-listened to it a bunch on the record player, like it was meant to be listened to.
That's always nice to hear. I mean, I half the time am not, I don't have the time to do it. And I will just go to YouTube and hunt it down.
Yeah.
So that means, okay, so at the very least, you were already familiar. As I hit my mic, you were already familiar with the Von Braun sketch then. Okay, that's good.
Yes. Okay. But again, like, it's almost like I forget what's in it. And then when I was re-listening to it this time, I was like, oh, yeah, all these great sketches. I mean, it's amazing.
I mean, that's the way it is every time for me, especially with them. I mean, it sounds so ignorant every time I talk about Nichols and May, because I'm like, from what I understand, it was improv and then sort of tweaked and turned into very solidly performed sketch comedy, except for the very end track on here, which is obviously just them being idiots.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's basically like the old style. I mean, because they were a part of the Compass Players in Chicago, which then turned into Second City. And a lot of the way in which they would do improv would be like they'd improvise something and then they'd like re-improvise it and re-improvise it and re-improvise it until it became a sketch. So it's like, I don't think they wrote anything down.
Right.
So that's crazy to me.
But. Yeah, no, that's insane, especially considering how tight this is. Language as well, not just moments, but the language is very tight.
Yeah.
Have you ever had to do this type of improv, like this very strict type of improv?
I mean, Second City kind of, I performed for them for a little while, but they sort of moved away from doing, or mostly they were having people bring in written sketches. But the, you know, I definitely like would, when I was like training with them, they have you improvise stuff. And then if you like a certain sketch, you try to re-improvise it. And it's really hard to re-improvise something because it basically like takes all the magic away. And you really realize like, oh, this only worked because I emphasized this one word. And you do have to make it as tight as this album feels, because you have to have to know what you did right, and that's really hard.
And especially if you gave like a really great moment, or you just popped out this perfect line, sometimes it's only because you were perfectly set up and you knew how to roll with it. And if somebody forgets or decides that wasn't the important thing to say, then all of a sudden the flow has changed for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's very hard. I don't know that I have a good enough memory to really nail it.
Yeah, thank no, God I can't video. Do it. I mean, that's why I don't understand how anybody who goes on Comedy Bang Bang remembers anything. I know that Scott sometimes writes shit down, but holy God.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, that part of things, I don't repeat a lot of characters, I think, for that reason, because I'm like, I don't remember all the canon stuff. I'm not going to be like the one who knows exactly what I said. Although with my new podcast, I'm a little worried about that. I'm like, I got to really like keep track of her life, I guess.
Right, huh?
You know?
Yeah.
I can't just be a new version of her every time, or maybe I can.
I mean, it all depends. I mean, that will lend itself to how much you could trust her, I suppose.
Yeah, right, exactly. Is she a liar? Maybe. Maybe, yes.
So when you first, was this record something that you originally found, like, how was it given to you, or how did you find it originally the first time you heard it?
Well, so the first time I heard it, I was an intern at Second City for the producers, and they have all these archives material and all this stuff. And I got really into like rewatching all these old videos. And then I got into like the history of Second City. And then I learned that they came out of the Compass Players. And then I did some research on that. And I forget exactly how I came across this album. I don't know if somebody like, I mean, it was just like the intern office was all the biggest nerds ever.
Sure.
I think we, you know, I probably learned about it there. And then I remember listening to the first sketch on this, the two doctors in the operating room, and just being like, that's the like magic of, that's my favorite kind of comedy, basically. Like, it's very serious and mm-hmm. like, it's so absurd, but everyone's fully committed to the reality. And that's kind of the magic of what I fell in love with about Second City. Just like, that's the vibe of it. And then, like I said, basically it just like popped up throughout my life ever mm-hmm. since then. And, I mean, it's just so good.
It's brilliant. And I'm surprised I had never heard, I think I maybe once listened to the Von Braun sketch knowing it had been cut. And I was like, oh, what is this sketch? But it's not even the best one on here. That first one though is just, it's also very super typical Nichols and May, because it's either usually some weird creepy romantic relationship right. or a weird creepy mother-son relationship. It's rarely anything else.
Which I love that.
It's so good. I mean, even once you get to the bit which is them working one out at the very end, he's like, oh, and you'll play my mother. It's right. like, you be my mom, and you be Jewish this time. Like,
yeah, exactly.
These very weird, specific. Now, I've never done improv in that style, by the way, where you just cut, like, let's try that line again.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know that I guess you kind of do that with, like, when my fiance Tim Baltz had this show called Shrink, which was all improvised, and I did Brilliant. A part on that, and that was like, there was some, you know, stopping and starting. Like, if you're improvising on a set, it kind of does work like that, where they're
Makes sense.
You know, hey, cut, okay, maybe you go a little bit further in this direction, or like, I'm just gonna let you say whatever you want to say, so just go for like, you know, 5 minutes, and then you're just saying insane shit, and then mm-hmm. later on, you know, man. Like, that's usually what a CBB feels like, that, where like the next day I'm like, what did I say? So, yeah, it's kind of fun to be surprised.
I don't think I realized that show was improvised, and I'm now so pissed off because it's such a good show.
Oh,
I had
Shrink?
No idea. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, no, it was brilliant. It was brilliant and difficult to watch in the best way. Like, yeah. So painful. Wow. That's great.
Yeah, so there's a lot of, I mean, I think, you know, certain parts of that were more scripted than others, but mm-hmm. like all those sessions and like the, I play a girl that he hooks up with, and it's that when we're basically hooking up in bed, and they just let me say the most insane shit. And I think at one point I said something like, I can't stop thinking about my family. It's so, you don't know what you're saying. And then later you're like, what's wrong with me?
That's amazing. I mean, and also then imagine we're doing a whole record about doctors and how much stuff they both were like dredging up, whether they realized it or not.
Yeah.
Just went with it. I mean, first of all, the opening is just the gag of him just, more gauze, please. Just,
oh my God, more, so good.
More gauze.
There's also like an ASMR element to it.
Very much in that one.
Really like nice to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Gauze.
And her voice, she has maybe the most pleasant voice I've ever heard on a record.
She really does. It's like both like, it's like simultaneously like sexy and just like you, but so smart and so funny and mm-hmm. so... it's just perfect. It's like everything you want.
I've probably complained about this before, but I'm just so annoyed that she hasn't done an interview in almost 50 years, and I just so desperately want to be the person to break that record, because oh my God.
Oh man, maybe she'll do it for this. We'll you never again. Know
one of these days. Listen, I've talked about your records a million times, please. And then, yeah, sure, if it turns into an improv session, well, then whatever, you know, if I get to improvise with it, that will never happen, but...
Why not?
Do you, so what was the one that you felt you had remembered the best?
It was the first one.
Okay.
That one to me, just because the pace of it is so wonderful, and the heightening, the, like, natural heightening of their relationship, of, like, how you feel, like... It does feel like this very real conversation.
Mm-hmm.
even, and I put aside all the, like, you know, I think if someone wrote that scene today, I would be like, how annoying and gross, like, the sexism element of things and kind of how much that's become a stereotypical scene. Mm-hmm. But so putting all that aside, they're both just, it just feels like they're in the moment. It's such a real, you know, dynamic. They've been together. They've hooked up however many times. He's desperate for her. She is clearly not quite as, and just the dynamic in which, like, they have to go about their job. And the job being as extreme as it is, and the poor patient having tools in it. I love it.
I mean, that's part of it too, is that, like, if I hear a tired sketch premise, or if I am faced with, like, this sketch, this whole album is filled with some toxicity, tons of toxicity, especially from him. This, like, is, there's blackmail, so it's super fucking creepy. Yeah, but the acting is where it's like, okay, I'm not going to judge either of them, because they're clearly playing this for the humor. But boy, if this was played by anybody else, it would be atrocious.
It's really, because usually I don't really forgive that stuff
a lot of the time. No,
and
me
in
neither.
This case, I do. I'm just like, yeah, go ahead. Just, she can play all the moms and all the, you know, desperate women.
Mm-hmm. I mean, she, if it goes back to what you're talking about too, is that I don't think there's a part where even she plays, there's some episodes, sketches on some records where she's playing a quote unquote idiot. But she's playing it in the smartest way possible. You never don't hear that intelligence behind what she's saying. So it feels like, oh, no, she's on board for everything. I don't feel like she's...
wrote it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you know? Yeah, and that's, and I guess that's a huge part of why I'm less... Is that why? Or am I just excusing it? I don't know.
No, I mean, I think to a certain extent, it's just like a product of its time. But, but you know, they do it and they just do it so brilliantly that you kind of are like, you know what? It's just so good. Mm-hmm. I don't care.
His oxygen is failing. Don't change the subject. Yeah, oh, right. My God.
The pace of that one is just amazing, especially if you think about them not writing that down and then them both just being like, you know, gauze, like how that came about and perfecting that. And it's just so good.
And it's a nice build with that, too, like to be able to continue to keep that pace. Again, in something that you're improvising over and over and over again is impressive.
When she says, like, well, I'm going to go. And he's like, what? And she's like, well, I handed you everything I needed to hand you. It's like, oh, it's so absurd. It's as if that were her only job.
Uh-huh. She's not there to, like, you know, normally what it wasn't the thing you have to dab the doctor's head to, right? All that shit.
And the ending, too, I think, is that end scene where you hear them break down, like, how they come up. It's just the process, it sounds like to me, of how they would write a sketch.
Right. That's the case. Would this be a format you would do if somebody said, hey, Lily, we want you to make a record with somebody with whom you work. Do it this way.
I would love that. I mean, I'd love to do this with Tim, to be honest. But
my,
like,
God. Please.
You know, I think about with my own podcast, when we did the first episode, I think we played it like really real because Tim and Edie, you know, they came on as this like insane couple. But it started out like us having listened to my podcast is a parody of Esther Perel's podcast, which is called Where Should I Begin? And it's real life, like, couples therapy. All the details are removed, but like the voices are real, and she's this fantastic Belgian therapist. And so I had them listen to it beforehand. So when we came in, they played it like, and I was in it too. And we were all like, it was as real as you can make it with it being as absurd as it was. And I think, you know, since then it's gotten away from that somehow, because a lot of the podcast comedy, especially improvised, is like a lot faster, a lot more absurd, a lot broader. And I, having listened to this album again, was like, fuck, like, I wish I had just been like, hey, everybody, this has to be just commit like crazy. Don't just be as real as you possibly can be. And, you know, I wonder, just like going hard in that style. I mean, it's just, it's so good.
Well, and also there's this big, people have been, and I, this is a dumb thing to nitpick about, but some people have said, you know, the new comedy, you don't need comedy albums anymore. You've got podcasts now. It's like, but you can't, with a few exceptions, you can't commit a comedy bang bang to a record because it's not the same. You're not there saying I've only got 45 minutes to tell a story.
Right.
You have the freedom to do what you want. You're playing with your friends. So it is a very different format. So it makes sense you would kind of go nuts if you had the freedom to.
I mean, I also think like the, with something like this, it's like you have complete control over what you're doing. Like both of them are, you know, both of them agreed that this was the best thing they could put on tape, basically. Mm-hmm. And I think with a podcast, there's like a level of like, you don't have that control. Any guest you have on, you can't control what they do.
Mm-hmm.
So you're sort of, it's a little bit more up in the air what happens for better or for worse, basically.
But I mean, it's also good too that you did decide to ground the first one. It at least establishes something about the show.
I like
that you would then immediately get to subvert that expectation if the next episode is as crazy as it sounds like it might have been.
I mean, it wasn't, it's not, it's just a little bit, everything gets a little sillier, I think, as the season goes on. So it's fun. But yeah, listening to this just made me be like, man, this really is my favorite kind of thing. Just, and I'm a sucker for dramedy type of stuff in general. So
sure.
Yeah.
I mean, is it the level of, well, what is it about that? Why does that appeal to you? Because a lot of the times we're talking to people who like comedy music, that's as heightened as you can get, or dumb sketch comedy like I like, which is not always as grounded and committed as this is.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I like all types of comedy, but I think what I like most about this type of style is just like what I find funny is usually real life, and like the real, a lot of my characters are based on like real people I have met and real, or like real family issues that exist. And I usually, like, for example, at every family reunion, there's this one extended family member who, in my mom's side of the family, who sings. He insists on singing, and he does not have a good voice, and he sings original songs that like some other extended family member has written the lyrics to.
Oh my.
And he'll stand up, you know, like if he's not written into a program of some kind, he will stand up. I've watched him do this at like a breakfast table and sing at everyone. And it's absolutely insane to me. It is like just so delusional. And it makes me be like, how is this real? How is this really happening? How are we all okay that this is going on? Why? What? And you know, recently, even my great aunt passed away, and we had to do a Zoom service, and he sang at that. And then my grandmother had a 90th birthday. Again, it was Zoom. I organized it. He insists on singing not one, but two songs. So I find myself in this position where I'm just like, I can't believe he's a real person. Mm-hmm. But the funniest thing about it to me is just that, like, that those people exist. It's not an exaggeration. It's just like, that is who he is. And so I think when I think about comedy, I'm like, you don't need to push it. You can push it, but you don't need to. And to me, what's I find funniest is just dysfunctional families is probably my like sweet spot. I love it.
That's fair. No, I love that. And that is, every time there's an element of that in these records too, family or some strong relationship that is, again, very, very dysfunctional and uncomfortable. I don't think there's one, I don't think there's any mother-son ones that are nearly as creepy as on the other one that I can't think of the name of right now, An Evening With, which we've covered a million times on the show, which is another thing. I'm super happy you picked. I've got somebody else coming on in a couple weeks who has picked the other one we haven't done, Improvisations to Music, which from what I understand is like maybe more pure improv, like less, you know, polished than this. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to it. to cover all of
that.
Yeah,
I actually haven't listened to that one, so I'll have to do that myself.
Same, and I've owned it for 20 years or something. I've never listened to it. I don't know why. And I love them. So the next one, this is such a dumb bit, but again, they get so much out of it. We don't have to do track by track, by the way.
Oh, yeah, well, whatever.
But, she's at the psychiatrist. Mike Nichols is a psychiatrist, and it's just that he has the hiccups. That's it.
He's so good at that. It sounds so real.
Almost chokes on the water she recommends he drink. She's just helping him the whole time. And trying to, do you hear her story? Because I can't, because they're trying to distract me from the story.
I can't hear the story. I couldn't pay attention. I was like, wait, no, like, did they really concentrate on that storyline?
Right,
we should follow that. No,
there's a death, I think, or somebody goes to the hospital. She's tearful the whole time.
It really is like that when someone has hiccups. Like, I can't, if I have them, I can see people not listening to me.
Mm-hmm.
I get them a lot, actually.
Yeah.
So it's this cool thing that happens to me. but he does that so well. And it's so triggering. It like makes your body be like, oh, God, mm-hmm. just get rid of him. Why does he have him? And the authority switch of like now she's like mothering him.
Mm-hmm.
The role reversal of that is just so good.
And unlike some of the other bits, he is actually playing somebody who's trying to listen. He's not, not the typical guy doesn't listen to woman talk. He is actually trying, but he can't get through it because of the hiccups.
Oh my God. And the idea that he wouldn't know any of these hiccup cures
right.
as Hold a doctor breath. Is, or a psychiatrist, I should say. So good.
I'm just trying to look and see the. Oh, that's right. They switch gears in the next one, and she's well. Okay, actually, originally track three is the Von Browns, which is really just a fun comment on how we hired a bunch of Nazis after World War II to help our government get by.
So that one was cut from the album for specific reasons, or
I'm assuming it was. Yeah, I'm assuming it was like, hey, this is some commie bullshit. Don't make fun of the government. I don't know. I'm just assuming. I should look that up, actually, now that I say that.
I wonder. I'm curious.
Talk so much out my ass. But yeah, I mean, it was just... But they never asked Tom Lehrer did a song about Wernher von Braun, and it's harsher than this track.
Right.
This is a very simple one-minute little bit about how they're trying to take over the world, just using America as their new starting point.
Right.
It's so good. I don't know why. Now I've got to look it up. Well, this isn't going to help me. I'm not going to be able to find it now, but I'll get
well,
an
no
answer
worries.
At some
Sorry.
Point.
You can just add a voiceover in here where you explain it all.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, that, I mean, it's such a fun idea. I mean, it's just such great satire in a way.
Yeah, it is. That's also the other thing is like this album's a mix of sometimes they're 1 minute sketches. Some of them go up to about five, and they still don't feel like it.
No, they don't. It all feels like very short little clips to me.
Mm-hmm.
It moves really quickly.
I'm trying to this is also another weird thing about this record is I have a few different comedy albums from around this time that are very much like, isn't the idea of analysis funny? Because they didn't really call it psychiatry. They just called it analysis. And in the mid-50s and the 60s, they were just like, since everybody's doing this now, let's make fun of it.
Yeah.
And the concept of talking out your problems, it's a weird mixed bag. This doesn't seem as judgmental of the idea of psychology necessarily, but...
Yeah, I agree with that.
You know? Maybe judgmental of humans in general and how we don't know how to handle our shit.
To me, it always just feels like, here's a real life scenario, here's the crazy person in the room. Mm-hmm. And you're like, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, like the way that they talk about, it took me a minute to realize that, you know, they were calling it, they call it analysis or they call it?
I mean, I know they say it a couple times in this. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think I agree that it doesn't feel like they're judging it. They're just, because it's not like, usually it's more a play on the doctor
mm-hmm.
than it is on the patient. And
right.
the patient just needs, you know, wants help, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they're insane.
Right.
And that's to me, like, at least it's less judgmental in that way. Like,
for
sure. The patient should be seeking help. But yeah, we've yeah, all yeah, had yeah, bad yeah. therapists before.
Sure. Yeah, I've had nothing but bad therapists.
So. You got to shop around.
That's, I know.
This is what my mom tells me.
Yeah.
Should find someone who can give you something more than a best friend.
Right. Right. Yeah, you know... I will tell you, I've had that therapist and that doesn't help. Don't tell a guy who's worried about his own privilege that everything he's worried about is okay and fine and normal. No, that's not what I'd like to hear. I'd like
What do you want to hear? You want someone to berate you about it?
No, but just feel, you know, you're right. Maybe you are being a dipshit right now. Why are you being a dipshit? Let's talk. And that's what I want to talk out, because it's not the stuff you can talk about with everybody, because I know I'm a dipshit, but I, you know, need a little confirmation.
You want someone to call you on your shit.
Yes. You know, and not have to foist that on friends. You know, nobody wants that.
I get that.
You know what I mean? Yeah. You're a very good listener. Thank you so much.
thank you.
I'd forgotten already about the one, though, the transference sketch where it's just him saying, you remind me of my mother. You know, have you been eating? Yeah, I've been eating. It's fine. What did you have?
Walking him through.
A Pepsi Cola, that's a meal. Good.
And that one's short, too.
It is. I mean, it's a simple joke. They don't stretch it out. They don't do the thing that bad sketches do, which is stretch out a concept that doesn't need to be.
It's true. Yeah, they don't feel the need to like make sure everything has three beats kind of thing.
Right.
Which is actually kind of refreshing.
Is there anything about your own training that you ever find yourself having to fight against in terms of stuff like that? Finding beats, finding a game? Is there ever a time where you're just like, fuck it, I'd like to do it my own way?
Well, I do a lot of like solo comedy back when there were theaters.
Sure.
I do a lot of like solo characters. So like the way in which they would do like an SNL audition, you know, but my best stuff was always things that were like 5 minutes long, just one character, or like, you know, 2.5 minutes. And it's like, it doesn't necessarily fit the like, okay, now we heighten. It's more like I had one character that like this woman is at a barbecue and she gets hit in the stomach by a football and is like just in pain, like trying to act like it's fine. And or I had like another character that was like a really uncomfortable wedding speech. Like the bride is speaking and her husband, they met by her husband just like sexually harassing her on the street.
Oh no.
And it's all framed really positively. And I think like a lot of those ones, like I didn't write with any intention of like it fitting the SNL 5 minutes caricature like crap, or like the, you know, I don't do a lot of impressions, for example. So I never felt, I always felt like my best stuff was the stuff that I was like, I'm just doing this for me and I don't really care if it works in relation to the format that everyone wants it to be in. So I don't know if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. It's one of those things that I find I get mixed answers on when I've talked to different people, because I've always wanted to feel like I'm just making it for myself and hopefully it fucking works for somebody else. And if it doesn't, what am I going to do about it? There are some people who just, I think, are so concentrated on what the audience wants and thinks.
Yeah.
But they can also, some people can do that and then do really great comedy, and I don't understand that mindset.
Yeah, me neither. If the more I think about what people expect of me, the worse the product is.
Usually. 100%. That's and why it's so rough.
You get in trouble there too, because you end up being like, you box yourself in before you've even done something, so you start telling yourself that like ideas aren't good enough. And
I'm an ass. I'm so sorry.
No, it could be a job.
No, I was expecting an interruption, but not that one. Fuck you. I'm so sorry. That's terribly rude of my phone.
Please.
I'm going to make a note that I was an idiot at 36 minutes and 46 seconds.
Please.
Okay. Sorry. You said you box yourself in.
Yeah, I think you can get in trouble because you start saying no to your own ideas before you've even begun. And that never works. At least for me, it does not work. So I like usually even before, let's say like if I have, you know, usually it helps me to think of a Comedy Bang Bang character, even for example, on days when I'm like, oh, I probably won't be on for like another couple of months. So let me try and think of characters randomly in a moment out of like joy rather than like panic of like, oh, fuck, okay. I'm going to be on the podcast. I got to come up with something good. You know what I mean?
I like that. No, that's good. That's a nice method.
Yeah, I think. And usually it's like when I'm in the shower or something like that.
Sure. Of course. Did you have any, and I don't want to presume this is the same case with you. I went to film school and I think I was an okay writer before I got to film school. And the second they threw the rules at me, I just blanked and didn't know what I was doing anymore. Did you have any trouble being told what the rules of comedy were after you already kind of knew your own?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm still learning the rules. I still feel like I've fucked them up. Like I don't... When I went to Second City, it felt like really natural for me. It felt like learning the improv rules was really easy and just like fun. And then when I came out here, there's just like nobody tells you the rules. That's the thing that I couldn't get over. 'Cause I didn't go to school for film. I went to a liberal arts school. So I studied theater there some, but it was my minor, and then I like did improv there, but that was pretty much it. So then by the time I came out here, I was like, what? Like, first of all, there's all these rules about auditioning I didn't know. And I get really panicky when I don't know the rules, because I'm like, oh fuck, someone's gonna be like, she picked up her script and she was not supposed to touch her script.
Oh, no.
And so she is an amateur and we shouldn't watch her audition. You know, like something as silly as that, I will end up being like, you know, I would come to my friends who'd been auditioning for a while and be like, so when I'm in the room, do I hold the script or do I not hold the script? And they're like, you can hold the script. You can do whatever you want. But if you prefer to not hold the script, don't hold the script. And I'm like, I just need you to tell me what to do and I will feel better. And with writing, it's a similar thing with like pilot scripts. Like even after, you know, so many years of like trying to understand how to write a script, I just feel like I'm getting it. And it's been like 6 years of me trying to figure out how that works. And I don't know that I'm good at it, but I know that I get it now. And it's just like, you wish someone would sit you down when you like arrive in LA and it's like, okay, so when people say, you know, all the lingo that gets used, like what's front facing about this show? It's like, what the fuck does that mean? Where is this dictionary that so the answer is it took me a long time. I still feel like I'm figuring it out. And I don't like that feeling. But at the end of the day, I think I'm better. My comedy has become better because I have to keep trying in every way I can. And you just get better because you have to keep trying.
It does. Do you feel like Comedy Bang Bang is a gift? I only ask because I tell you, you don't hear improvisers enjoy themselves nearly that much on anything. It's one of those shows where there are so few rules.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
I mean, it's weird. It's interesting though, because I think with Comedy Bang Bang, like I was saying earlier, it's a specific style of improv where I think a lot of people award it for being so quick and so fast and so like you get points for being the fastest, and that's not necessarily to me always what makes things the funniest.
No.
It can, but it doesn't always mean that. And I think when you're on there, Scott's just so good at being like, I'm going to make space even for, you know, even when like I was first on there and didn't know what the hell I was doing, he made space for me and like, you know, slowed things down to let, you know, his guests in. And he does that really seamlessly. So you feel safe.
Yeah.
And I think when people feel safe, you know, because you're basically, when you first start going on there, you're with complete strangers. You don't know anybody. So it can feel really like scary because you're just like, all right, great. So I'm supposed to have a good show when I don't know any of these people I'm with.
Yeah, that's
I don't know that they're going to get what I do.
Right.
And I don't know that they're going to support me. Mm-hmm. But thank God for Scott, because he makes you feel like I'm okay. I'm safe.
But at the same time, he has this thing that he does where he will pick apart your language. He'll pick apart your improv, but do it within the bit in such a way where it's like, it's a challenge. It's a seeming challenge. Again, I haven't participated in it, but it seems like a very welcome and fun challenge.
Absolutely.
It's like you just said this stupid shit. Please justify the stupid shit you just said.
You simultaneously want your bit to be called out a little bit. Okay, like you want to be called like absurd because that's what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So he's really good at being like, well, hey, hang on a minute. You said this stupid thing. Did you really mean to say that? You couldn't have meant to say that. And then you get to be like, yes, I did. I'm insane. But also, like, you know, there's a safety to, but I think, at least for me, like, I love getting made fun of.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me feel safe. It makes me feel better. So, because it, you know, someone's paying attention.
Yeah.
And so he's just so good.
Yeah. That is one of those things that I can only assume goes back to family. That's why it is that way for me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
I've got two brothers, and we do is, like, roast each other, so.
I mean, that can be beautiful in and of its own way. You know what I mean?
I think so. Some families, you know, like, they don't do that. I have some friends whose families don't tease them, and mm-hmm. it is an adjustment being around someone uh-huh. who wants to tease you.
Yeah, I've had some friends who have been difficult friends to make because, you're not on that same, okay, I have to take this down a few notches.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I don't make you think I'm actually abusing you.
Yeah, like, I like you, that's why I'm teasing you. And they're right, like, what? Right. That's disturbed.
That is fucked up. Please get help. Speaking of that, there is a bit on here. I think it's another minute one.
You're going to have to be the one who keeps redirecting us to the podcast, clearly.
Here's the thing. First episode, presuming there's another, every first episode somebody comes on, there's always autobiographical stuff. But it also like helps us break down why we like the thing.
Yeah, you know? That makes sense.
You know, I mean, there's a whole sketch where Mike Nichols just comes in and berates her for being one of the most disliked patients in the hospital.
I know, that one's the weirdest one to me.
Yeah, it's very short and quick, and it doesn't have an obvious, like, it's not obvious what the sketch is other than he's just being an asshole.
Yeah, like, clearly she... Because I guess she has kind of like a weird voice at the beginning.
Uh-huh.
Or like she has a character voice on.
Yeah.
So at first you can't figure out, like, is she the weird one?
Right.
Like, and is he, because clearly he's the doctor, so
mm-hmm.
she must be a really disturbed patient. And then slowly you're like, but she has a sling and she's hurt and she needs help. And he's just...
For $150 a day, doesn't make you my boss. We don't have to change your sheets and all this shit. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
There's no talking to her.
God.
Terrible. Terrible.
Also, there's the one where she plays the therapist, right?
Mm-hmm.
She's the doctor in one, and she's the therapist in one, and she's hitting on him in both of those, I think, right?
I think you're right. Yeah.
The doctor one is her... examining
him,
and he's like 32 and he takes off his shirt or like gets undressed, and then she's kind of like can't keep the conversation going.
Right. When I hear sketches like this, and after you hear the last one, you're like, okay, so how much of this was Mike Nichols saying, wouldn't it be really funny if you were attracted to me again? You're my doctor. You find me so irresistibly handsome. Let's do that. That'll be a bit. And I'm just like, is that what it works? Don't get me wrong, because of her fucking commitment.
Right.
She's my favorite part of these records. I love him. But I just like, where did this bit come from? Who introduced this bit?
Yeah, that's a good question. Can't tell. Yeah, I think, with the therapist one, I take it back. She's more like desperate than she is hitting on him, but she's sort of.
Oh, yes, that's right. The one where he's complimenting her the whole time. You're the most beautiful analyst I've ever seen, that kind of thing.
Or no, the one where she's like, it's Christmas, and he's I'm going to go be with my family. And she's like, why wouldn't you come to our session?
Oh my God, I forgot. Yeah, I forgot about that one. You're right. Mm-hmm.
But some of them are like, you're like, oh, it's like disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
You're worried.
Uh-huh. Very much so. I'm always like, with all these old records, I'm always like, where the fuck is this going?
I also think there's some element to what I love about this is that with old movies, there's a really specific way of talking.
Sure.
And this kind of captures that to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have, it's like every old movie you've watched, but like the absurd version, like a kind mm-hmm. where you're like, oh, wow, what? Oh, man. And I think that part of it's like makes it especially funny to me because it kind of ends up being like a parody of old movies in a way.
Oh, yeah, very much so. They pick these different styles to go with. I even it's making me think of An Evening with Mike Nichols and Elaine May, because that is stuff that is maybe even more so. Maybe it's not more so. Maybe it's just because this is themed to doctors that I don't think of it in the same way.
Yeah.
You just have a better ear for it. It makes sense. Yeah, because the manner in which they're... People didn't talk like that. Nobody talked like that. That's not how people communicate. But in the movies, for fucking sure they did.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way to sort of play up melodrama.
Right.
I love it. Also, I like that her name is Dr. Mittelschmerz in that one. And his name is Klaus Prober, and she's about to give him a physical.
Klaus Prober?
So stupid.
Oh, my God.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. There's
they like funny names back then, too.
I mean, how do you not? You have to go with it. What is the name, apologies for forgetting, of your not social media expert character on Comedy Bang Bang?
Francesca Bolognese.
So stupid. I love it. I love it so much.
I looked up that name recently, and uh-huh. there are real women named Francesca of Bolognese.
There have to be, right?
I guess so.
How do you make up an original? It's almost impossible to make up an original name.
You'd think.
I think there's a bit in here. So there's a sketch. Okay, so I know nothing about Albert Schweitzer, and Albert Schweitzer comes up on one of their other records.
Okay.
So this sketch doesn't
I don't know
really
anything about him either, but
play
he's the,
as, yeah, he
the
was,
therapist. Or he's the doctor that she talks to in Africa.
Yes, right. Yes. And what's really funny is I don't think, here's what, again, I could be wrong. His accent changes. For the beginning, she's like, Dr. Schweitzer, and it's almost like he doesn't know he's supposed to play Albert Schweitzer. And then it progressively gets more German sounding, but it's like, yes. It doesn't start that way. He sounds like Mike Nichols at the beginning.
That's very true. That's very true.
It's a weird bit, and that they kept it on the record, I kind of love. I kind of love the imperfection of it.
That one feels like such a product of its time of like, if you knew who he was.
100%.
Which, unfortunately, I do not.
Nope. And I try to
I hope
it
no
up,
one judges.
It still made no sense to me, and I'm sorry for those many people who are listening. Who are
yeah, everyone's going like, what the heck?
You fucking kids, you idiots.
You idiots.
No one's calling me a kid. I'm 40 still. It's wishful thinking.
I mean... You're a kid. We're all kids. Till,
let's
you're
do a
kid
bit.
Till you're
I'm
not.
40, but I'm a kid. Okay, this is the sketch we're doing.
I mean, that's white men are kids until they're like 85.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Don't remind me. What was I saying about needing a good therapist again? What was that we were talking about?
So are white women, honestly, though. So it's...
No, you're fine. Well, I can't read my own notes, so this is great. This is super helpful. Oh, right. No, but there is the bit. I don't know if you read this note or read this online about the Nichols and May at work, which is, if you guys listen to this record, it is them working out a sketch, which we already talked about.
Yeah.
But John Mulaney has been quoted saying, like, that's his favorite thing that's ever been committed to a record. It's a weird bit, but I do really like listening to them work it out.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know... Again, a product of its time in terms mm-hmm. of like what the vibe is, because they're laughing about him wanting to be a nurse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A man wanting to be a nurse and how absurd that is.
Right.
Because obviously, why would you want to be a nurse? All women are nurses. It's mm-hmm. like a lower totem pole job.
Yeah.
And how hilarious.
Yep.
But the whole joke being like you're taking away. This guy wants a job that has no power.
Right.
But right. I think the joy of that is listening to them work it out and mm-hmm. then how hard they're laughing because you can see their process. And that's true. Like the best bits are the ones that make you laugh the hardest. So mm-hmm. I don't know that I get the same joy that John Mulaney gets from it.
Sure.
But I do... I think it's really incredible to like listen to that magic basically mm-hmm. that's being made. And like, I'm sure that's how they made all their best sketches just like that.
Well, we don't sit around listening to comedy albums in a nice suit and tie, which I'm assuming is how John Mulaney listens to every comedy album.
Yes.
Like, just looking too good and feeling very mid-century about the whole thing. That's my picture of it.
Yes, yes. I mean, he's so good and so smart. So
it's annoying. It's
he
annoying
probably would have much more interesting things to say about this than I would, but...
you know, I doubt that. I doubt that. Nothing against him. I have found this conversation fun. Do you think... I mean, that's the other thing, too, about not to just keep going back to Comedy Bang Bang, but it is a really nice... It's the perfect parallel to what isn't a comedy album, but also is very much like it. You can't be like... All you can do is tell Scott, here's my character name, maybe what I do.
Right.
And if you can't be like, I've got this great line I want to do, unless you're given this moment to just spew and introduce yourself, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think, like, the most you could probably do would be like, hey, don't ask me about this.
Fair.
Or like wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Yeah, yeah.
But normally, yeah, it's like you say, he's like, so what are you? And then you're like, I'm a donut salesman and my name is like Megan Frosting. Uh-huh. And he's like, okay, sounds good. And then you're just like, you're in it. Mm-hmm. And I think when I did Francesca Bolognese, I told him to introduce me as a social media expert, but then it turned out like, of course I wasn't, but I wanted it set up that way so I could just be like, it's not exactly that I'm an expert, but mm-hmm. this is what I do. And so I think that's the, he'll get mad at you though, for those mm-hmm. in a joke way, of course.
Sure.
Like, I remember Mary Holland, I remember listening to one and she got introduced as something. Mm-hmm. And then she was like, and also I'm a ghost. And he was like, what? He's like, why didn't you tell me you were a ghost?
She's the only person who can get away with that level of I don't know how. I don't get it, because she's a brilliant professional actress, but she does shit that I would never let anybody get away with.
She's incredible. She's talk about just playing with pure joy. She's just like free. It feels like just free of any kind of negative thought when she's playing. It's amazing.
Yeah, that's the challenge, right?
It is. It's basically just like, don't judge yourself. Just plow through and try your best to stay in the moment and have fun. But man, is that hard.
If you had to theme a record like this one is themed, let's say it's with you and the delightful Tim Baltz. Yeah. What's the theme?
Oh, that's a good question. My God.
Because weirdly, the theme of psychiatry and psychology has come up a lot regardless of the theme of this record, so
right.
It's gonna be hard to not think about that. But
I like the idea of like it revolving around a space, like there used to be this, I forget the name of this one improv form that there was, but it basically all takes place in one location. Mm-hmm. So, like one big location, like a mall or an airport or like a, you know, any place where there'd be like numerous, like a big theater or big whatever. And then all the scenes take place in different parts of that said space. And
that's awesome.
At different, you know, different times throughout that space. Whatever that ends up meaning. I think there's a little bit more structure to it that I'm forgetting, like the way in which you would call back the scenes.
Oh, sure.
But I think there's something like so great about it being like I love one act plays that take place only in one space.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the, I think there's something really magical about that. So I think I would probably like pick a space and be like, everything takes place in this one place.
I like that. I mean, well, that is a really nice way to also explore. The thing is, and I won't call this a weakness, they play a lot of characters with the same dynamic or similar dynamic.
Yeah, this is true.
They're playing with that, though. Like, that's the thing they're playing with. Whereas, I mean, knowing what I know of your work, knowing what I know of Tim's work, the idea of playing this variety of characters could just be mined for so much.
Yeah, I mean, I think I really like the idea. because I think this goes beyond the podcast element, like we were talking about, of it being a little bit more scripted and, mm-hmm. you know, improvising to maybe figure out an idea or coming in with something more concrete like a script, but you create what isn't necessarily like a, because there's a lot of, also a lot of like scripted content on podcasts nowadays that are more of a story of some kind or mm-hmm. an episodic type show, but yeah. creating more of like a sketch audio show. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it exists already, so please forgive me, but something that like plays a little bit more with the way improv works and sketch works and an audio mm-hmm. version of that, I think. I think there's a lot of unexplored territory there.
Yeah. You bring that up, and I'm now realizing something that I had wanted to bring up. I think I can only think of one or two, and maybe I'm wrong, one or two sound effects on this whole record, and I'm a big sketch comedy person. I love tons of sound. That's yeah. not how these work. There's a little bit of reverb, and there's yep. just the two of them.
I was surprised where there was a couple. When I heard the couple sound effects, I was like, oh, wow. Uh-huh. And then also when he plays with his voice, for example, when he was like being a doctor and like examining her, and you can kind of hear him be like, let me take a look at that there. And like that, I was like, oh, that's more than I would have expected for the time to like yeah. kind of play with the sound in that respect. But
for sure.
But you're right that there's, other than that, pretty bare bones.
Yeah, I don't know. Again, it's shocking that it carries so well for me, because again, I'm not that picky, but I just have a preference. But yeah. And this doesn't hit it. There's just like, the only one I can even think of is where she tears the thing he's wearing to have to look at his body.
Right.
It's the only time I can think.
And that part almost feels like you're like, what am I listening to? Is it still the same scene?
Uh-huh.
Kind of takes you out of it. Sound.
It does, very much so.
Yeah.
Okay, so I would like to know, maybe you've already answered this, but do you have a favorite track then on this whole record? Is it also the first one?
I mean, I think I had to be boring and like answer That's yet again boring. That it's the first one.
It's not boring. That is not boring. It makes sense.
It's the one that made me fall in love with it. So yeah. I think, and that's the one that I always, like, has always been in my mind when I think of them. So
I love that.
It's got that like, it sounds stupid, but it's like the Second City magic. Like, you know that, like, the tingle you, I mean, for all comedy lovers that you get when you're like, maybe you grew up watching SNL and you're like, ooh, SNL. And like, you have whatever your little kid version of that. That's what I feel when I listen to this.
I love that.
The sketch.
No, that's good. That's a good thing to still get. You shouldn't have to feel bad about liking the first sketch on the record. You know, that's how it always goes. You usually remember the thing that's just like, especially for like a musical. I'm looking at my wall of records and like thinking about it, like which of these, and half the time it's the first thing that's on the record.
Yeah.
I didn't mention that these are originally from radio, which I didn't even know. Most of these at least originally aired on NBC Radio at some point.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that either.
Yeah. So they're all radio tracks. I don't know enough about the history. People give me shit about it probably, but I don't care. It's fun that these weird things made their way into the radio as well. That also is strange to me.
Yeah. I remember reading that like most, if you were like a certain type of person, like a certain level of like education and like you're like kind of upper middle class, like there was a good chance you had this album at your house, because it sort of taps into like that social economic strata and like that sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that interesting, because I was like, oh, okay, well, like, is this the equivalent of like kind of like hipster comedy or whatever it is
right.
today, like millennial millennial comedy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's fair. I hadn't heard that, but that does kind of track. And again, I'm looking at the wall again to see like which of this shit would be the low. I mean, I know which of this is the low.
The low brow.
Whoa, yeah, that. Especially, actually, you know, I tried a couple years ago to listen to every album in my collection and failed because most comedy albums are bad. And that's just it. Like the low brow was like these people selling their shitty, you know, their shitty record after their show, and they were not a good comic, and they were just like, yeah, right. But I got the money to cut a few records, so yeah, that existed. The low brow was definitely there.
It's out there.
there are gems within that subsection of type of comedy record, but they're rare. They're mostly just racist.
And yeah,
just
right.
Like, okay, I'm good. I'm good with this.
Yeah, that's another thing I will say. Thank God there's not any racism in this. There's sexism, but no racism.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
I mean, maybe there is, and I'm blind to it. Who knows?
Right. Okay, so if you're going to recommend this record to somebody, let's say somebody doesn't know, I don't think a lot of people are even going to know unless they're buffs of movies. Buffs of movies? That's not a phrase. That is not a phrase. Movie buffs. What the hell? Maybe they don't know who Nichols and May are. Why give this record a listen?
Oh, boy. I think... How would I phrase it? I mean, it's basically the beginning of improv sketch comedy, like by two incredible comedians, and they're parroting all things in the medical world, and I think it's just very real but also absurd, and it's a product of its time in that I'm doing a really bad job.
No, you're not. You're not. No.
But it's a time warp, but it's also like very relevant, I think.
I think so. I mean, if it wasn't, would you be doing a podcast about a psychiatrist? Probably not.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this stuff won't get old. There will always be doctors. There are always going to be bad ones.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all such narcissists. We got to make fun of them.
Mm-hmm.
Just kidding. I love doctors. Thank you for all your work,
agreed.
Especially right now.
Agreed. Yes,
should not, of course. Not the time to be bashing.
Maybe
doctors.
Not. But I mean, you know, it's a comedy show. Is it? It's a comedy show. Of course it is. I say buffs of movies. So this couldn't not be a comedy show.
Yeah. Anyway, cut out everything I said.
Oh, okay.
And tell everyone to listen to this because it's really good. That's my recommendation.
Where can people find your new podcast? Tell them where, how many episodes, okay. What are we looking at?
I believe it's 12 episodes.
Okay.
And it's on Stitcher Premium. It's called Going Deep. And there's a couple of podcasts named Going Deep, but this one's with Diana Deep. Uh-huh. And it is, it's therapy. It's couples counseling sessions. I play a therapist. The episodes are like 45 minutes to an hour, and we've got really good guests. Paul F. Tompkins, Scott Aukerman, Lauren Lapkus, awesome. The list goes on. And what else? Did I forget anything?
I don't know. No, I mean, I think
and
that's
please
it.
Listen. It's fun. It's insane.
And people can find you on Twitter at LILYYILY.
Yes, my famous Twitter handle, which is I can't give it up now. I just have to keep selling it.
No, eventually people are going to have to learn it. That's just, you have to force the world to learn it. It's just the way it goes.
There might be other Lily Sullivans out there, but no other Twitter handles like that.
Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh my God, thank you for having me. It's a blast.
This has been an absolute delight. You're welcome back anytime. I don't know. People go listen to, I don't care. I don't give a shit. Go listen to Lily's show. That's all that matters. Thank you guys for listening, and as always, have a good thing. Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. It is produced by Mike Warden and is hosted and edited by Jason Klom. Our theme song was composed and performed by Richard Levinson. You can email us at podcast@comedyonvinyl.com. You can also send snail mail to Stolen Dress Entertainment, P.O. Box 805, Burbank, California, 91503. Subscribe to Comedy on Vinyl on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and anywhere else you can find podcasts. Give us a 5-star rating and write us a review. It helps. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Comedy on Vinyl, or find everything in one place at comedyonvinyl.com. A major portion of Comedy on Vinyl has been underwritten by Stand Up Records. Please visit standuprecords.com for all your comedy needs, and tune in to the new Stand Up Records channel available on the Roku, where you can also find select episodes of this podcast. Visit stolendress.com to listen to our other podcasts, watch videos, and imbibe freely of our multimedia content going back 15 plus years. Stolen Dress Entertainment.
Hey, it's my turn.